Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. In April, for the very first time, the Environmental Protection Agency set limits on PFAS, or forever chemicals, in drinking water. Around 50% of rivers and streams contain measurable PFAS concentrations. Nearly 200 million Americans are served by water systems that contain PFAS, according to a 2020 study published by Science and the Environmental Working Group. PFAS are a class of about 16,000 compounds used to make products resistant to water, stains, and heat. They're called forever chemicals because they do not naturally break down and have been found to accumulate in humans. In fact, nearly every one of us has measurable amounts of PFAS in our blood, according to the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. These chemicals are linked to cancer, birth defects, liver disease, thyroid disease, plummeting sperm counts, and a range of other serious health problems. PFAS can be found in so many products, including nonstick cookware, toilet paper, guitar strings, dental floss, makeup, brake fluids, ski wax, fishing lines. The list is just so long. A new investigation by today's guest, ProPublica's Sharon Lerner, details how 3M, the American manufacturing giant, discovered and concealed the risks of these toxic substances for decades. According to Sharon Lerner, between 1951 and 2000, 3M produced at least 100 million pounds of PFOS, that's PFOS, and chemicals that degrade into PFOS. PFOS is one of the company's fluorochemicals. This is roughly the weight of the Titanic. After the late 70s, when 3M scientists established that the chemical was toxic in animals and was accumulating in humans, it produced millions of pounds per year. So what did 3M know? When did its science know about the harmful impacts of forever chemicals? And what can we do to protect ourselves and our environment? You can read Sharon Lerner's latest piece, which got a lot of attention. It's called 3M Executives Convinced a Scientist the Forever Chemicals She Found in Human Blood Were Safe. It was co-published with The New Yorker, and you can find it at yourcallradio.org. Sharon Lerner is an award-winning investigative journalist at ProPublica. She has reported extensively on PFAS and how manufacturers of the chemicals covered up their dangers for decades. Hi, Sharon. Thank you so much for your very important work, and thank you for joining us again.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Well, we've got you for the hour, and we're so glad that we do, Sharon, because this issue is so important. I mentioned a bit about forever chemicals and what they are, but can you elaborate on that? What are we talking about exactly here?
Yeah, so these are compounds that are based on chains of carbon atoms that are with the carbons bonded to fluorine, which is, you know, another element. And the bonds between carbon and fluorine, the carbon-fluorine bond, is incredibly strong. It's one of the strongest bonds in chemistry. And because of this, the chemicals have all these industrial uses that you mentioned. They're resistant to heat and to moisture, and they don't degrade over time. So that makes them incredibly useful. And it also makes them incredibly dangerous, because if they don't degrade over time, they end up building up in the environment. And as you mentioned, they also accumulate in our bodies. So that's where the problems begin.
It's wild to think, Sharon, that pretty much all of us have PFAS in our blood.
Yes, yes. The CDC, ATSDR, is part of the CDC. They have said nearly everyone has at least one PFAS compound in their blood. And there was a study earlier this year on done on fetuses that were weeks old, and they were from terminated pregnancies. And even these weeks old fetuses had PFAS in their blood. And beyond that, you could actually, the authors in the study, the scientists, were able to find that the level of PFAS corresponded to changes in the liver that are associated with health problems down the line.
Wow. And you write that PFAS chemicals bond with protein and keep accumulating in the body. Can you tell us more about that?
Right. So the reason that they don't just pass immediately through is that they attach to proteins and the proteins that have functions in our cells. And that's how they end up affecting our health.
And again, just basic questions to go over this, and then we'll dive into your reporting. How mm-hmm. did these chemicals end up in so many products? I just remember reading last year, and this one really caught my attention from Time Magazine. Now we need to worry about harmful forever chemicals in our toilet paper, too. So you cannot avoid PFAS.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that one. Well, yeah, they're, as I mentioned, incredibly useful. You said in the beginning there are thousands of different compounds in the class. I mean, and each, right, you can't list all the different products they're in because there are too many. In 2022, 3M, which is the company that I was writing about in this article, released a spreadsheet that listed all the products of theirs that still contain PFAS. They have said that they're on track to phase out their manufacturer of PFAS by 2025. But in 2022, they said that they were making, at that point, they had more than 16,000 products that contain PFAS, and that's just one company.
Wow. What is the difference between PFAS, P-F-A-S, and PFOS, P-F-O-S?
Yes, so confusing. PFOS is an individual compound. It is a type of PFAS compound. So PFAS is the class that contains thousands, as we said. And PFOS is one of those chemicals. It's based on an 8-carbon chain, and it was a compound that was introduced by 3M in the 1950s. It was used in firefighting foam. And basically, there are all sorts, as we mentioned, of these compounds that are, again, carbons bonded to fluorine, right? And so 3M had a lot of products that had different fluorochemicals, and that's just another word for the PFAS compounds. And they were using them in Scotchgard, which is one of their big products. It was like a big blockbuster coating for fabrics, and also in food packaging. And I'm using the word fluorochemical here because they didn't put PFOS in there. They put different closely related compounds. And what we know now is that when those compounds from Scotchgard and other products got into the human body and also into animals' bodies, those bodies inside the body, they break down and become PFOS.
Okay.
Very complicated.
Now, it's complicated, but thank you for that. So according to a study published in Science by the Environmental Working Group, nearly 200 million Americans are served by water systems that contain PFAS. Now, the EPA recently announced that it was going to limit PFAS in drinking water. Can you talk about how significant this is? I mean, a lot of people would say, why has it taken so long? And how will this be implemented?
Well, before we do that, let's just talk about the EPA limits. So the EPA did limit PFAS in drinking water for, I believe it's 6 PFAS. It's PFOA, it's PFOS, and it's a few others. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 PFAS, actually, which is wonderful. But there are, as we've now both mentioned, thousands of PFAS. So what they did was limit PFOA and PFOS, which are no longer being made. These are what they call legacy PFAS. They're old. And there are still so many more that are in use that are not limited. So it is a wonderful step the EPA took. And it, as I said, limits PFOA and PFOS, which are two compounds that have been extremely common in people's water and in people's blood. And it lowered them to levels that are extremely, extremely low, almost zero. So that's great. But again, it leaves a whole bunch of compounds out. So we're doing this, the way they've been approaching this is not as a class, which would be quicker and more efficient, but one by one. And since it's just one by one, we have now five of these limits.
NPR.
The other thing about this, the other thing I'll just say about this is that it is wonderful, but there are still questions about how it will get paid for. So there was just litigation with 3M where the settlement was that 3M will provide up to $12.5 billion to pay for getting these compounds out of the water. But the assumption is that it'll cost much, much, much more than that. And so the question is sort of who's going to end up paying that? And I think it'll be, in many cases, ratepayers, the people who drink the water.
Wow. Much, much more than $12
billion. What's
involved in that process?
Well, filtering it out, you know, and you need, you know, I can't actually speak to the equipment that they need, but it's expensive. And, you know, the estimate that I got was that it would be up to about $100 billion for the country, you know, over the next 30 years.
NPR reports that water utilities and chemical companies are challenging the EPA. At least three lawsuits against the rule were filed in the U.S. Yeah. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. What are your thoughts on this? And do you think that this could ultimately end up in the Supreme Court?
Oof. Well, given what we just saw, I certainly, that is a scary thought, because we know that this is a court that does not really overwhelmingly prioritize environmental health. But yes, I'm not, I guess I would say I'm not surprised. I have seen that there have been challenges to these limits. And it's, you know, that's what companies do. That's what their lawyers tell them to do. They don't want to be saddled with the cost, so they do everything they can to fight it.
And Sharon, given that so much is at stake in the election, you know, I think it's so important to point out, you know, what's going to happen if, well, we don't know what's happening on the Democratic side, but the Biden administration at least did this. We know that any Democrat is on board with this, given that it came from the EPA.
I mean, this is more action than we've seen in a long time,
right?
And really on kind of any chemical. So this, you know, what the Biden administration has done on PFAS, well, I mean, I pointed out its inadequacies, but it's still more than other administrations have done by far. So, and I think if, you know, I covered the Trump EPA when he was there the first time, I think it would be safe to assume that we would not be seeing further protections from PFAS, given that, you know, one of the Project 2025 goals is to eliminate the EPA. So yeah, I think it's safe to assume that we could expect more from a Democratic administration on this front.
Right. And especially this one, it would be completely rolled back. So that's important to point out. Sharon, can you talk to us, given that you've reported on PFAS for so long, talk to us about what is involved in all of this? I mean, in this recent piece about 3M, you write that much of your reporting, which started in 2015, focused on what 3M and DuPont knew, even as they continue to produce PFAS. So tell us what's involved in reporting on this and trying to get answers to all of the questions that you have.
Well, a lot of the reporting on this I did, you know, as you said, I started in 2015 and I reported, you know, from 2015 to 2020, I did a lot of reporting, just kind of following the litigation around this and trying to look at the documents that were released and find out, as you said, what the different companies involved knew and when they knew it. And also trying to sort of illustrate the harms and report on the science as it was evolving. And then, I mean, I have been reporting on other things in that time, you know, in the past 9-10 years. So I have definitely worked on other stories, and in the past few years have not focused so much on PFAS until this recent story.
And given that you've been working on this for so long and you've interviewed so many scientists, what do scientists say about coming up with safe substitutes? What will it take for companies to stop using these chemicals?
I think that, you know, it depends on the scientists you talk to. I think that in many categories, they're unnecessary, period. I mean, I don't think you can really, you know, they're in toys, they're in cosmetics. None of the, you know, you can certainly make these things, many, many of the uses just are simply not necessary. I think, you know, I have not, you know, part of the replacement process has been putting, so for instance, PFOS, which we've been talking about, that was a chemical that was introduced in the 1950s, very useful in firefighting foam, and I mentioned related chemistries and all sorts of other products. And when 3M ultimately decided to stop making that in the year 2000 because they were, because of revelations that I write about in this piece that we're going to discuss, what they did when sort of forced to phase out PFOS was that they phased in a replacement that ended up being similarly harmful.
Today, we're spending the hour with Sharon Lerner, investigative journalist who covers health and the environment for ProPublica. Her latest investigation about PFAS forever chemicals is called How 3M Executives Convinced a Scientist the Forever Chemicals She Found in Human Blood Were Safe. If you have any questions or comments for Sharon Lerner about her work and PFAS forever chemicals, we all have PFAS in our blood. PFAS chemicals are used in so many products, including toilet paper. I mean, how do you get away from that? I've done some research about what toilet paper actually doesn't have PFAS, but that's the thing. You really have to do your own research. It's in dental floss, nonstick cookware, hand sanitizer, guitar strings, and the chemicals are linked to cancer, birth defects, liver disease, thyroid disease, plummeting sperm counts, and a range of other serious health problems. Before we talk about the former 3M executive that you met, let's talk more about 3M and how they ended up making PFAS. As you write, they were founded in 1902 as a mining venture in northern Minnesota, and then they pivoted to sandpaper. You write, a series of clever inventions aimed at improving our everyday life. That's what they decided to embrace. So tell us more about how this evolved. How did 3M end up making PFAS?
So during the Second World War, there was, everybody knows, I think, about the Manhattan Project, which the team of scientists that was putting together the bomb. And one of the technologies that they harnessed to do that was a way to bond carbon and fluorine. And prior to that, fluorine had been very, very dangerous to work with. It's a really reactive chemical. It kind of it tends to explode and release very poisonous gas. So this new technique that was used in producing the bomb ended up being useful in producing PFAS too. 3M hired some of the scientists that had been in the Manhattan Project, and basically they ended up using a process that was, again, safer to create fluorochemicals on a large scale. So that's, and in the beginning, they didn't quite know what to do with them. They had these new compounds. And one of the first things they did was decide to sell one of them. They came up, struck a deal with DuPont, and DuPont bought PFOA, which was a related compound, and it used it to create Teflon. So for 3M, they were using it to sort of for tubing or for various industrial processes. And when some of the scientists were working with it in the lab, this like blob of fluorochemical landed on one of their tennis shoes, and they realized that they couldn't scrub it off and that it was water resistant. And so they had sort of a light bulb moment, which led to the creation of both Scotchgard and what was called Scotchban, which was another product, a chemical that was used to coat paper for food packaging.
Now, in your story, you write about how you wanted to know, you know, how much 3M knew about PFAS. How had the company kept secrets? For many years, you write that no one inside 3M would agree to speak with you. And this latest piece that got so much attention is about a former 3M chemist named Chris Hansen. And it was so interesting to learn, Sharon, that you actually connected with Chris Hansen because of John Oliver's show. John Oliver has this great show on HBO, and he takes one topic and focuses on it for 30 minutes. And it's a comedy show, but it's really news. It's called Last Week Tonight. And so he dedicated a show in 2021 to the forever chemicals. And I love his show because I think he reaches so many people that, you know, we might not reach on public radio or on ProPublica. And one of Chris Hansen's former professors sent her the John Oliver segment, and she watched it at her kitchen table. And that moment, that's why she would eventually connect with you. I think that just speaks to the power of media really focusing on these issues. Because what if John Oliver hadn't done that segment?
Yeah. And I was actually just able this past week, I went on The Daily Show to talk about that article. So we've gone full circle with the late night TV shows and PFAS.
Now, that's great, right? Because you need to reach people who might not be listening to public radio. I hope they are, of course, or people who aren't reading ProPublica.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us more about how that started. What happened when Chris Hansen decided to reach out to you?
Yeah, so Chris actually, so when she watched that segment, it was in 2021, she was sent it by one of her old professors, and it said, you know, PFAS is connected to all these health problems. It's very dangerous. And that was actually not what she believed at the time. She thought that she knew it was everywhere, but she was told, had been told, that it was not dangerous, that it was not toxic. And so she had kind of kept that belief with her for a long time. We can talk about why later. But anyway, she was kind of thought it was not a huge health problem. And so when her professor sent her this clip, she thought she, and she responded to the professor and said, you know, I'm sorry, there are a lot of inaccuracies in here. And the professor said, well, like what exactly? And when Chris then decided to do some research, and I should say that it had been years since she worked with PFAS chemicals. She was in the environmental lab at 3M in the late 1990s. After that, for about 3 years, I believe. After that, she took other jobs totally unrelated to PFAS chemicals at 3M. And so in 2021, she was still at the company, but she was not doing anything that had to do with those chemicals. So when she started to dive in and actually read about the health effects, and at this point in 2021, there's a very robust like scientific literature listing all kinds of health effects, it kind of began this journey for her of realizing that she had been duped in a way. And so she ended up connecting to another scientist who suggested she reach out to me.
And as you report, for years, she repeated 3M's claim that PFAS was not harmful. And she told you, I'm not proud of that.
Yeah, I think she feels very bad about that.
Wow. Well, you can find the story that Sharon Lerner wrote at yourcallradio.org. We're going to take a quick break. Today, we are talking about PFAS and forever chemicals with Sharon Lerner, who's done incredible investigative work on these issues. She's an award-winning investigative journalist at ProPublica. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Thank you.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. And we're always looking for your ideas about how you want us to cover the election in the coming months. Today, we are talking about PFAS and forever chemicals with investigative journalist Sharon Lerner, who has a piece at ProPublica that I hope you can take the time to read called How 3M Executives Convinced a Scientist That Forever Chemicals She Found in Human Blood Were Safe. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. Well, I knew these questions were going to come in from listeners, Sharon, because we all wonder, is there any way to avoid PFAS at this point? What can we do about this?
Yeah, I wish I had a great answer for people. I would say, you know, so the USGS recently did a study showing it to be in 45% of tap water samples. I do not think that that means that you should buy bottled water, because unfortunately PFAS is in bottled water too. So there's not to sound too defeatist, but on some level, I've accepted that this is, you know, this is the case. We all have these chemicals in us, and that's just the deal. I think the less processed food you can use, the fewer plastic containers you can use, both because of your exposure to the compounds in plastic, which are sometimes PFAS, and because there's really no good way to dispose of them, and those are an environmental crisis in themselves, you know? So I would say less processed foods, you know, fewer plastic containers. And, you know, you can look at websites like the EWG has a wonderful guide that will tell you about the products, the different chemicals in cosmetics, that kind of thing. But unfortunately, I don't think any of us can avoid them entirely.
Well, and to your point, I mean, you really need to do your own research, because the EWG also has information along with Consumer Reports and others, how to get PFAS out of your drinking water. And so they look at the filters that take it out. I mean, I looked for toilet paper that doesn't have PFAS in it. I mean, you really have to do a lot of research. That's where we are. And when you look at the recent Chevron decision by the Supreme Court, I mean, in many cases, as Erin Brockovich tweeted, she said, you know, in many cases, we're on our own. You really have to do a lot of research on these issues.
Yeah, I wish that were not true, but I think it is.
Right. I feel the same way. To your point about the makeup, Sharon, we just saw that The Guardian has a piece out yesterday, toxic PFAS absorbed through skin at levels higher than previously thought. It says new research for the first time proves toxic PFAS forever chemicals are absorbed through human skin and at levels much higher than previously thought. Though modeling and research has suggested the dangerous chemicals are absorbed through skin, University of Birmingham researchers say they used lab-grown tissue that mimics human skin to determine how much of a dose of PFAS compounds can be absorbed. And they say the paper shows uptake through the skin could be significant to these harmful chemicals.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, honestly, my thought was, so my piece is a lot about the history of this issue, and it's a long and involved story about people, actually. And one of the people, I write about Chris Hansen, who you mentioned, who was a chemist at 3M in the environmental lab in the 1990s. And that story, I tell the story of what happened to her. Basically, she was asked to look into these, to look into a finding that basically an outside lab had, which was 3M had hired this outside lab to analyze the blood of its workers, right? And this is a long-winded answer to your question. Just bear with me. But basically, she was asked to figure out whether it had made a mistake. And the lab had analyzed the blood of workers, but in the process, it also got blood from blood banks and found that, like the worker blood, also the blood bank blood appeared to have a fluorochemical in it. And Chris was asked to figure out what was going on, where the lab had made a mistake, because presumably the suggestion was it had. Well, it turned out that the lab hadn't made a mistake, and she went on to show that PFOS, the chemical we've been talking about, was in the blood of the general public. So this piece was about kind of discovering her discovery, as we mentioned, that she that the chemicals, even though she hadn't been told they were toxic, that they were in fact toxic. So what she missed, she realized they were in everybody. What she didn't realize was that they were in everybody and they had the potential to harm everybody's health. Mm-hmm. But part of what I was doing in this piece was trying to uncover who else had known about this, the company. So she ends up realizing that another chemist at the company had realized the same thing in 1975. So she realizes, oh my goodness, this finding that their chemical was in the blood of everybody was actually, the company or somebody at the company knew that decades before she was asked to figure it out herself. But one of the things that I discovered was that the scientist who gave her that assignment, her boss, had also known. And I ended up interviewing that person extensively, and he told me that he had done some of the first research on PFOS in the 1970s. And one of the things he did was he shaved rabbits and he put fluorochemicals on the skin of the rabbits. And he saw that the rabbits that had the fluorochemical on their skin ended up having PFOS in their liver. And what that showed was that it was absorbed through the skin and the body processed it, and then it ended up accumulating in various parts of the body, in particular the liver. So I saw that and I thought, well, good, gosh, it's good they know that, but it's also basically 50 years since someone inside the company realized it himself. So it is an important realization, but my long-winded answer is to say, like, what did I think of that? I thought, wow, when I saw that article, I thought, wow, Jim Johnson, who is the name of her boss, had known that in the 1970s.
Wow. Well, it's amazing what he said. He, quote, these idiots, once this happened, once he learned about the rabbits and PFOS showing up in the bodies, he said, quote, these idiots were already putting it in food packaging.
Right. So he realized that it was, he had told me that he was working to basically get the company not to put PFOS in various products. I think some of the things that were on the table was maybe putting PFOS in toothpaste and maybe putting it in diapers or fluorochemicals in toothpaste and diapers. And he said that he succeeded in convincing them not to do that. And I said, and then he suggested, but, there is sort of a lost cause. And I said, why? You did that great work. And he said, well, they were already putting it in food packaging.
Wow. And he also said that he did not report it to his boss or anybody. There are some things you take to your grave. You write, at one point, he also told me that if he were asked to testify in a PFOS-related lawsuit, he'd probably be of little help. He said, quote, I'm an old man, and so I think they would find that I got extremely forgetful all of a sudden.
Yes. Wow. Yes, he did say that.
What happened, Sharon, when you contact 3M about these interviews?
So they responded in a statement. They told me that the company is proactively managing PFAS and that they're on track to phase out the manufacturing of them by the end of 2025. And then they told me, they didn't deny anything I wrote about. And I wrote a lot about what went on inside the company. And they didn't ever say that any of that was wrong. What they did say was that the company's approach to the chemicals has evolved over time. And they said basically that, the science and technology of PFAS, I'm reading now, societal and regulatory expectations and our expectations of ourselves. They basically said those things have evolved. And as those have evolved, so has the company's approach to the chemicals. Hmm.
Today, we're speaking with Sharon Lerner, investigative reporter with ProPublica, about her latest investigation focusing on PFAS or forever chemicals. If you have a question or comment about forever chemicals, we all have it in our blood. It's in so many products, you name it, toilet paper, dental floss, guitar strings, makeup. And a lot of studies have been done finding that these forever chemicals are linked to many serious health problems, including some cancers, liver disease, and birth defects. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Anyway, I appreciate this information, but I've got to tell you, I've spent a long time looking for a hand cream that doesn't come in plastic. Can't find it. I'm thinking maybe you can try something like olive oil or something like that, which is awfully sticky. So there's no way to avoid this. I mean, not every product, but many of the products that I buy, which are organic, are in plastic.
So I hear you.
I just don't know how you get around this. And not only that, it's going to get worse given what's going on with the Supreme Court. So people are going to have to be incredibly diligent in trying to find stuff that doesn't have this. By the way, I just say, we're swimming in an ocean of toxic chemicals. It's not just PFAS, you name it. I mean, we get exposed environmentally to just so many different toxins, it's unbelievable. So, like I said, I appreciate the information, but, you know, good luck. You're going to have to be a detective to find things that are clean, quote unquote. So thanks.
Gosh, you make such a good point, Greg, about the plastic bottles. I mean, it's impossible, Sharon. I did find a company that they would send you shampoo and, well, no, you can buy it in the store in glass bottles. It's really expensive.
I know. Well, you can get, and there are places you can get refillable things. But yeah, no, I'm completely with you, and it makes me bananas too. And it's very, very difficult. But I think the consumer pressure on this, I know that a lot of people don't want to be, you know, using these single-use plastics all the time. And so I think that we just have to keep making our voices heard on this.
Right. Well, Greg, you make a good point. I mean, we hate focusing on the individual and, you know, the research that we have to do when we know we've got to pressure the government to take action here, but we have to be honest about this, Greg, as you say, and look at these Supreme Court rulings. We're just going in the wrong direction. So in many cases, as a public service, we have to also do shows about safe products and where we can find things. I love going to those refill stores, but it is all plastic. Even if you bring a glass bottle, you're getting this stuff out of a anyway, this is just where we're at, and so we've got to keep talking about this. Thank you, Greg. We have an email from Sam who writes, what about donated blood? I'd read that donating blood lowers PFAS, but doesn't that create another problem for the recipient?
I have never read that, and so I don't really feel like I can speak to that. I mean, I would think all blood, whether it's donated or not, since virtually everybody has it in their blood, whether it's donated or not, it's going to have PFAS in it. If you have more than the recipient or the donor, I mean, I guess it depends on who you are and who the other person is, but I wouldn't think it would necessarily do either. But like I said, I'm no expert on that.
All right. Thanks for the email. Another question. What about compostable packaging? Do they contain PFAS?
You know, last I looked into it, some of it did. But I haven't been looking recently, so I don't know that I can speak to that. I think it does, basically. Anything that is, you know, it's waterproof. You know, it's not natural, like cardboard isn't naturally waterproof, and it's lined with something that is unless it's wax, like it's certainly possible. And I know it has been found in compostable packaging before. I just don't know the very latest on that.
I just found a piece in The Guardian from last April, toxic PFAS chemicals used in packaging, according to a study from ACS Publications. And it says that a group of toxic PFAS chemicals have been found in all kinds of packaging. So you can look at, we'll add this to our link, to our show. And it's that basic brown box that you get when you ask for takeout.
Yeah, there are all sorts of different ones. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a caller off air who says a great resource is greensciencepolicy.org. Yes. Well, thank you for that. The EWG is also a good resource. Sharon, going back to your story, I mean, given that you uncovered so much, what else really surprised you about what you learned, given that you have been covering this for almost 10 years?
Well, I had known since about 2018 that there was a scientist within 3M who in 1975 was approached by two independent scientists. And, well, the company was approached by these two independent scientists. And these independent scientists said, we've found this chemical in blood, in the blood of people who don't work for 3M, just in the blood of the general public. And it's a fluorochemical. And we suspect that it might be one of the chemicals from your products. Can you confirm? And so when the company was approached by these scientists, what they did was they didn't confirm, but they took the chemical structure that they had been given by these independent scientists, and they had one of their chemists analyze it and see whether it matched any of the compounds they produced. It was 1975, and he did. He matched it and said, this is PFOS. But instead of confirming this to the independent scientists, they refused to tell these scientists what they had found. And in fact, I spoke to those scientists, one of whom is 97 right now. And he remembered, you know, trying to get information from them and the 3M executives getting tons of information from him, but they, you know, 3M wouldn't share what was going on. Anyway, so I was surprised me. So I knew this, that someone in 3M had basically figured out that this compound, PFOS, was in the blood of the general public. And we know from documents that were released through litigation that there were notes that explained this about the scientist. And in the notes, it says that this scientist named Dr. Newmark, he said that lawyers told him not to reveal what he knew. So he knows that PFOS is in the blood of the general public, but the lawyers tell him not to reveal it. And so it turned out that the person who had wrote those notes was Chris Hansen, the person who came to me and said she wanted to tell me her story. And so she told me, so I was familiar with this document, and I was able to get it from the other side to hear what it was like and hear her experience of being, you know, she had found these chemicals. She had taken what she found to her bosses and said, oh my goodness, this chemical is in the blood of basically everywhere I look. And in response, instead of hearing like, good job, or oh no, or this is important, let's, you know, try to deal with it immediately, what she got was, really, are you sure? Because maybe I think you're probably wrong, and your equipment might be wrong, and you should try it again, and I think you think it's everywhere, and you seem to be mistaken. Basically, she was challenged. Mm-hmm. And so what was surprising was to kind of learn both that after this discovery in 1975, not only was the public left out of this discovery, but even the company scientists didn't realize what was going on. So when Chris Hansen went to the company in the late 1990s, 96, 97, all she heard was this was in the blood of workers and it's harmless, not it's in the blood of everyone. And when she found it out, you know, they, instead of acknowledging what she had found to be true, they challenged her. Hmm. So what I thought was really interesting and surprising in this story was to understand kind of how the company had managed to keep this secret for more than 20 years and how, you know, what were the dynamics and just sort of getting some insight both from her and her boss, her former boss, Jim Johnson, into like what they knew, what they didn't know, and how they were convinced in different ways to keep this secret themselves for years.
Well, you can find Sharon Lerner's piece at yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from another caller. Let's go to Hayes in San Francisco. Hi, Hayes. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to mention there was a movie, a film made in 2019 called Dark Waters by Todd Haynes that was dealing with exactly about this. It's a drama, but it's based on reality. It's about a farmer whose animals were dying because of water that was running over from a 3M lake.
It was actually from a DuPont lake. But yes, I'm very familiar with that movie. And I did write about that case in 2015, the farmer, the tenant, his name is Tenant, and it was a DuPont plant in West Virginia.
Right. And actually DuPont had bought the thing from 3M. So it was all from about PFAS. The unfortunate thing I wanted to mention is it's pretty much in us already. So even if you were trying to cut back on plastics and everything, it's already in our bodies. So it's a bit of a non-plus event there. So, But thanks for the show. This is great. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much, Hayes. And as Sharon says, she writes about dark waters in her recent piece. And also, Sharon, we had you on a while back when you worked at The Intercept. You wrote so many stories exposing DuPont's multi-decade cover-up of the severe harms to health associated with a chemical known as PFOA or C8. You wrote three stories about that.
Well, I wrote many more stories than that. But yes, I did write about that farmer and that story well before that movie happened, indeed.
Right. And you can search, I'm specifically talking about the Teflon Toxin series. So that's, really.
And then there's another page called, if you look up The Intercept Bad Chemistry, it has dozens and dozens of stories all about PFAS chemicals.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks again, Hayes. A caller off air wanted to know, does 3M N95 masks have PFAS? E&E News reported that, yes, PFAS are in face masks. So it's everywhere, Sharon. And again, lots of emails about what can we do about this.
Yes. And I personally don't have any knowledge about whether they're in the N95 face masks, but I don't know one way or another.
Well, we'll link to this. It's E&E News by Politico. PFAS are in face masks, should you be concerned. Sharon, after you have done all this research, you've gone so deep. How has this changed, given that our individual actions are more important than ever now because of these governmental regulation rollbacks? How has this changed the decisions that you make in your life for your family?
Well, I mean, I already don't use nonstick pans and, microwave popcorn and whatnot. And I very much try not to use single-use plastics, which I think is whether or not they contain PFAS, some do, some don't, is important. And I guess I think it's important to focus on the larger, issue, which I tried to do in this piece beyond 3M, is it's really a piece, I think, about corporate responsibility and about secret keeping and like how we can do better. Potentially, I'd like to think we can do better in terms of preventing companies from keeping this kind of dark secret from us. And one of the ways, we can do that is make it more costly for them to do that. So in the case of 3M, they were fined by the EPA for withholding information about the harms to health and the environment. And for hundreds of counts of violations, they ended up settling to pay, their settlement payment was $1.5 million. Which is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of what they earned from the chemical. So I think we have to find ways to punish companies and make it hurt for companies to withhold this kind of information from us. We already have laws that say that you can't. It's just that they're kind of toothless. If you're only fining a multinational company $1.5 million for basically information that has planetary consequences.
Do you think that, depending on what happens in November, if the Democrats take back the White House, that they'll continue to take actual action on these issues, given that people are so concerned?
I do. I mean, I certainly hope so, but they are scheduled to, and I expect they will. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what are you working on right now, Sharon?
More investigations about chemicals.
Well, thank you so much. It's so important. Sharon Lerner is an award-winning investigative journalist at ProPublica. You can find her latest piece. It is called How 3M Executives Convinced a Scientist the Forever Chemicals She Found in Human Blood Were Safe. Find it at yourcallradio.org. Sharon, thank you so much for your important work, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you for all of your questions and your comments. If you have any show ideas related to this or related issues, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. And given that exposure to PFAS is related to many cancers, we recently did a show about why cancer is on the rise and what we can do to prevent it. You can find it at yourcallradio.org, and we will do many, many shows on these issues in the weeks and months to come. Thanks to Malihei Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.